For nearly two decades, Philadelphia Congressman Chaka Fattah has coasted to re-election. It might not be so easy this time around. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. The veteran Democrat is running while facing federal corruption charges and, as a result, has attracted many challengers. WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports that Fattah nonetheless may still win another term.
Inside the grand ballroom of the Pennsylvania Convention Center, the smell of syrup wafts from dozens of tables filled with some of the city's most recognizable faces. School Superintendent William Height and legendary music producer Kenny Gamble are among those here for this Urban Affairs Coalition breakfast event. There are city council members everywhere, and Congressman Chaka Fattah is working the room.
Yeah. So I heard you on the radio, too. You're doing your thing, too, man. I keep tracking.
I'm enjoying it, you know?
Right. Fattah says he always attends the event, but when you're running the biggest race of your career, he says it can't hurt to touch base with a room full of influential voters.
I'm not campaigning in a political sense, but it is an opportunity when you are the incumbent. The best thing you can do for a campaign is to do your job. I mean, that is, if you do the job that you want to continue to do, that is the best kind of marketing as whether or not one might want to select you to do that job, right?
This year's election isn't business as usual.
Good morning. I'm Zane David Memicher, United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. Joining me this morning...
In late July, U.S. Attorney Zane Memicher stood before a room of reporters and outlined a 29-count indictment against Fattah and four associates. The dizzying 85-page document covers five schemes the group allegedly participated in for personal and political gain. The one getting the most attention alleges Fattah's 2007 mayoral campaign took an illegal $1 million loan, and then the congressman used a pair of nonprofits he founded to help repay the loan with charitable and federal dollars. Fattah maintains his innocence and calls the case against him a smear campaign.
They're frivolous charges, but if someone alleges something about you, we have the best system in the world to vet that, right? It's an American courtroom.
Fattah's trial is scheduled for early May, 6 days after the Democratic primary, the election that will effectively pick the next leader of the 2nd Congressional District. Roughly 80% of voters there are registered Democrats. Smelling political blood in the water, four people are running against Fattah. They include State Representatives Dwight Evans and Brian Sims, Philadelphia Ward Leader Dan Muroff, and Lower Merion Township Commissioner Brian Gordon. Fattah says he welcomes the challenge. In fact, he's a bit energized by it.
It's a rejoiceful moment in as much as what we can do now is we can have the voters of the district ratify the work that I'm doing and authenticate the fact that I'm representing their interests in Washington.
Fattah predicts he'll soundly win a 12th term in Congress, but he's not taking any chances. This time around, he's carved out days on his calendar for hitting the campaign trail to talk up his record.
There are tens of thousands of families who have benefited from my mortgage foreclosure relief effort. There are tens of thousands of senior citizens who benefited from work I've done that provide support services for seniors. There are young people and their families who benefited through my work in education.
Not to mention the millions he steered towards streetscape and transit projects across his district, which includes Northwest Philly, West Philly, parts of North Philly, and now a slice of Lower Merion Township. Talk to ward leaders and voters in the district, and you'll find that Fattah's confidence isn't just hot air. Greg Spearman leads the 60th Ward in West Philly. He's one of roughly 20 African-American ward leaders who are backing Fattah again.
I mean, I haven't heard any reason not to support him if he says that he's innocent. That's what I would want my constituency to do. That's what I want my supporters to do. And so I got to take him at his word.
Longtime Powelton resident Elaine Simon is concerned about the indictment, but says she's willing to suspend judgment until the trial.
I guess I'm slightly sympathetic with a level of desperation that the candidates end up feeling, particularly if they're not self-funded, and you know what it takes to run an election these days.
That attitude changes when you head to the suburban parts of Fattah's district. In 2010, redistricting redrew the lines of the second to include parts of Lower Marion Township in Montgomery County. Marion resident Rich Wattman says he won't vote for the indicted congressman.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. Every politician who gets in trouble like this, the first thing they do is say, you know, people are out to get me. Well, I just believe that there's got to be some truth to it somewhere, or else, you know, the allegations wouldn't have been made.
Larry Marshall of Narberth is a bit more blunt about his distaste for Fattah.
He was a loser before, he's a loser now. So would I support him? No.
Fattah probably won't need Marshall's vote to win, but he will need a lot more money. A candidate in a competitive Democratic primary could easily spend $3 million or more. As of the end of September, the most recent filing, Fattah had less than $3,000 in his campaign account. Fattah says he's not worried about fundraising. It's the votes that'll get him reelected. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Those with severe, untreated mental illness are estimated in a new study to be 16 times more likely to have fatal encounters with police. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Ann Hoffman reports.
The new report analyzed data on police shootings from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, as well as independent databases maintained by The Guardian and The Washington Post. It finds people with severe mental illnesses like schizophrenia are involved in at least 1 in 4 of all fatal police shootings. John Snook heads the Treatment Advocacy Center, which compiled the report, and he says the grim findings are no surprise.
If you have a severe mental illness, especially one that's untreated, you are much more likely to come into contact with law enforcement officers. And unfortunately, that's when these sort of tragedies happen.
Snook says the report points to the need for better treatment for people with serious mental illnesses.
The reality is we need to stop those situations from happening in the first place, rather than trying to address them on the back end.
Michelle Monzo teaches police how to recognize the signs of mental illness in Montgomery County. She says when officers come into contact with the severely mentally ill, they often don't realize it.
They're faced with a lot of difficulties in the sense of they have to make very tough decisions, and mental illness can mimic many other things.
For example, a person who is hearing voices may not respond to requests from officers to put up their hands or to stay put. That can be interpreted as a threat to the officer. The report says increasing the number of psychiatric hospital beds and expanding the use of court-ordered outpatient care would reduce these incidents. It also calls for better databases to track every officer-involved shooting. For WHYY News, I'm Ann Hoffman.
South Bethlehem has long lived in the shadow of Bethlehem Steel and Lehigh University. Today, while it's home to one of the highest-grossing casinos in Pennsylvania and a world-class arts center, it remains a struggling neighborhood. As part of Keystone Crossroads' series on housing, WHYY's Lindsay Lazarski reports on what many Pennsylvania communities are experiencing. Some pushing for change, others protecting what's already there.
Developer Dennis Benner has big plans for the area surrounding Lehigh University in South Bethlehem.
We're going to recreate a new neighborhood here.
Benner wants to see the neighborhood go from a hodgepodge of locally owned businesses and old single and multifamily homes to a buzzing college neighborhood with upscale housing. He's been buying up vacant land and rundown properties for about 6 years. Two parcels, an old electronics store with a collapsed roof, and a condemned house will be demolished to make room for a luxury apartment building with retail on the first floor. He's hoping for a Chipotle. Benner's planning another development across the street. He says he'll keep the black and gray stone facade and some of the stained glass windows of a shuttered church as the entryway to a 10 to 12 story apartment complex.
That church that you see over there, front facade will actually be a ruin. Behind it will be a courtyard and housing behind it. People can wander in and out to the space.
In total, Benner says he's planning to build 6 or 7 buildings with a mix of retail, office space, and several hundred luxury apartments that rent for $1,100 to $1,400 a month. It'll cost more than $100 million. But not everyone is on board with Benner's vision to remake South Bethlehem.
Money talks. That's what I call him, Mr. Big Pocket.
That's Olga Negron, a community leader and the unofficial mayor of South Bethlehem.
My friends just say, oh, here comes the mayor of the South Side, because I'm always all over.
She moved to South Bethlehem nearly 20 years ago from Austin, Texas.
And I rented in the South Side first for about a year and a half, and ended up buying my house right here in the South Side because I saw the energy, I saw that the potential.
Negron, who was elected to city council in November, says she's seen the neighborhood come a long way since she first moved here. She says she's not against development, but Benner's plans don't fit in with the rest of the neighborhood. For one, his proposed buildings are much taller than most of the existing buildings there. And then there's the rent.
High class or, you know, higher end apartments in that neighborhood doesn't even go together. Who's going to afford to live in there?
In the area where the development is planned, more than three quarters of residents rent, and the median yearly income is just under $23,000, according to the most recent U.S. Census. So that's about $600 per month, about half of what a person would need to live in one of Benner's proposed buildings, following the guidelines that no more than 30% of income should be spent on housing. Benner says he wants to attract different residents, like young professionals and professors.
I've been doing development work for 35 years. And if there is one thread that runs through it all, it's change. I represent change. And a lot of people don't like change. They like the way things are. But it's like anything. If you don't change, you're going to die on a vine.
To create this change and finance these projects, Benner and other developers are hoping to take advantage of a state program called the Community Revitalization and Improvement Zone, CRIZ. The CRIZ incentivizes development on underutilized or vacant land by taking most of the state and local tax generated in the zone and giving it back to the developer to pay down the debt. Bethlehem's Director of Community and Economic Development, Alicia Miller-Karner, says these new developments would be good for South Bethlehem.
You know, we're talking about people who can not just barely afford to live there, but afford to live there and spend money there. I mean, I think that's what you want to see in any community that's looking to have a vibrant business district as well.
For Benner's proposed developments to be realized, he still needs approval from city agencies and the CRIZ authority. To Benner, it's just a matter of time. Lindsay Lazarski, Keystone Crossroads.
Turning to this evening's headlines, employers in Philadelphia will now only be allowed to run a criminal background check on applicants after making them a conditional job offer. The expanded Ban the Box law signed today tries to remove barriers to hiring former felons. The law has exceptions for those working with children or in law enforcement. The city of Wilmington could lose $1.5 million in funding for fighting crime if city officials fail to tell state lawmakers where police officers are being assigned. The News Journal reports that the legislature's Joint Finance Committee approved the funding December 2nd to pay for 20 weeks of foot patrols and overtime patrols by Wilmington, county, and state police. Wilmington has not been given a firm deadline for providing that information. Clear skies, 53 degrees at 6:19. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, clear skies, falling back to 42 degrees overnight. Sunny again tomorrow, Wednesday's high 56. Clouding up Thursday, rain likely heaviest in the afternoon, high 58 degrees. Friday starts off cloudy, then turning partly sunny, high 48. Sunny days, Saturday and Sunday, Saturday's high 40, up to 47 degrees on Sunday. Still ahead, many public schools fear they have to choose between ignoring major holidays on the calendar or risk accusations of religious favoritism.
This is the time of year that a lot of people in the public school system call the December dilemma. And the December dilemma is, what do we do about these religious holidays?
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Fed tries to guide the economy through rough spots, but really, can it?
Seems to me the risk of the economy hitting recession when monetary policy is not in a position to respond are much greater than they have been previously.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks Tonight starting at 6:30 this evening.
New Jersey's Clean Energy Program proudly supports WHYY. New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, incentivizing businesses, local governments, schools, and residents to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing in your home and business with support from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Tis the season when several faiths celebrate holidays. But in this politically correct age, many take umbrage over referring to this as Christmas time, especially in schools and other public places. Taking us to school again is Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Jonathan, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Good to be here as always.
Now, in the 18th and 19th and early 20th centuries, apparently public schools opened with an oral prayer or Bible reading. When did it start to change?
Well, actually, it wasn't until the Supreme Court decisions of the early 1960s that prayer and Bible reading as school activities, as school-sponsored activities, were ruled unconstitutional.
Though, of course, the First Amendment spoke to the separation, classically, of church and state.
Exactly, but it wasn't interpreted to bar that kind of activity. It's interesting, it really wasn't until the 61, 62, 63 that the courts start to say, hey, if a teacher gets up and leads the class in a prayer or leads the class in a sectarian Bible reading, that violates the separation of church and state. For most of our history, it was considered quite consistent with our national traditions.
Of course, this is not a settled dispute. We can fast forward to this year's controversy in Montgomery County, Maryland.
Yes, well, this is the time of year that a lot of people in the public school system call the December dilemma. And the December dilemma is, what do we do about these religious holidays? And what they decided to do in Montgomery County, Maryland, which I should tell you was the county that I grew up in, is they just said they wouldn't give a religious name to any holiday. What happened was that Yom Kippur was going to fall on the same day as Eid, as one of the Muslim holidays that the Muslims were asking for the schools to recognize. And instead of calling the day either Yom Kippur or Eid or both, the school system decided just to remove any religious names from the calendar, including Christmas. So there's no Christmas break. There's a winter break. Once this hit the blogosphere, people started to fold into this story about the war on Christmas. You know, what liberals and their friends are doing is trying to remove religious symbols and indeed religious celebrations from the public square.
Let's talk about then a subsequent court ruling in 1971 establishing what was called the Lemon Test for religious activities within schools.
Yes. Well, the Lemon Test, the basic idea of the Lemon Test is you've got to be neutral between different faith systems. So a public school can't favor one religious faith over another. And indeed, this is why in Montgomery County, they decided to remove the religious designations, because if they chose either Yom Kippur or Eid to describe the day on which both fell, they would be perceived, I think correctly, as favoring one faith system over another.
But what's considered a religious versus a seasonal symbol? The Christmas tree, for example?
Well,
the Hanukkah menorah?
This is something that the courts have been grappling with. What it comes down to now is that the courts have said that you can't have a sectarian symbol, and you can't have a symbol that has a very intimate relationship with worship. So you're not supposed to have a creche in a public school, and you're actually not supposed to have a menorah. Because both of them are considered part of religious worship. Christmas trees have been challenged, and the courts have said that the Christmas tree, although obviously it has a religious meaning, that it's become part of kind of the national iconography. And because it's not directly related to worship, Christmas trees are okay.
So for now, I wish you happy holidays. And if the weather cooperates and ahead in the coming weeks I see a snowman on your property, I'll think nothing of it.
Indeed. That's a perfectly acceptable symbol for all of us. Happy holidays to you too, Dave.
Jonathan Zimmerman is a professor of history at New York University. There have been many adaptations of the Sherlock Holmes classic, The Hound of the Baskervilles, since Arthur Conan Doyle wrote it over a century ago. The latest at the Philadelphia Theater Company is simply called Baskerville. NewsWorks theater blogger Howard Shapiro says it's all for laughs.
That Hound of the Baskervilles is one dogged creature. No matter how many times Sherlock Holmes solves the mystery of why the animal kills men on the foggy moor, it comes back to do it again. In the entertaining, campy production at Philadelphia Theater Company, the bloodthirsty pooch is an excuse for all the characters around him to chew up the Sherlock Holmes story as if it were a mere doggy bone. And even the quite serious Dr. Watson is in on the fun, you might presume. Uh-oh. Here comes the hound now.
Ah! No! No! Stay back! Stay where you are!
Pretty dangerous dog, I'd say. It's the only intense thing about Ken Ludwig's spoofy adaptation called Baskerville, which had its world premiere earlier this year in a co-production in Washington, D.C., and at MacArthur Theater in Princeton. Amanda Dennert directed that first version, and she directs here at Philadelphia Theater Company, where she has an unusually warm Holmes in the actor Ron Menzel, plus a gamely Watson in the boyish Henry Clark, and three other actors who romp gleefully through the plot in more roles than I could count. Here, Holmes warns the Texan who's set to inherit the Baskerville mansion that the property's not all that safe after the man's older brother was set upon by the hound.
Sir Henry, heed what I say and follow my instructions to the letter.
Instructions?
You must avoid the moor in the hours of darkness at all costs. It is a landscape that will try to seduce you with its morbid beauty. But you should not leave the house at all without Watson. Is that clear?
Not clear enough, apparently, but then there's a lot of complicated plot in both Conan Doyle's original and this dizzy version by Ludwig, who wrote the much-loved stage farce, Lend Me a Tenor. Like that play, Baskerville has more gags than you could shake some shtick at, and they're well brought off by the cast. Amazingly, Ludwig never strays from the original plot, despite the running jokes and effects. One of them, in which three men are caught in a windstorm, is so extreme and so believable that it's drawing applause every night. Baskerville runs through December 27th. For WHYY, I'm Howard Shapiro.
Finally this evening, we heard last month that the Oxford Dictionary chose an emoji as their word of the year. There are those little faces often inserted into texts and emails. Not to be outdone, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary has revealed its word of 2015, and it, too, is not actually a word. It selected the suffix "-ism," propelled by its most searched words list, which this year included terrorism, fascism, socialism, and several other "-ism" words. Next up is the American Dialect Society, which will make its selection next month, and there's a good chance theirs may not be a word either, as the group chose a hashtag last year, Black Lives Matter. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen at newsworks.org. Gentrification. It's become almost a dirty word in Philadelphia, connoting neighborhood improvement for one group at the expense of another. A new study says the net effect of gentrification is positive. That story on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, Philadelphia's musical holiday tradition, the Philadelphia Orchestra's glorious Sound of Christmas. The Philadelphia Orchestra and conductor Bramwell Tovey present sparkling carols, classic favorites, and more. Holiday tickets and gift certificates at philorc.org or at 215-893-1999. This Thursday through Sunday at the Kimmel Center. The Glorious Sound of Christmas with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The holiday gift that keeps on giving is a fund at the Philadelphia Foundation. You can support the arts, protect natural areas, promote health, provide scholarships, and help the needy, all while receiving tax benefits. The Foundation makes it easy to make a difference now and forever. The Philadelphia Foundation. 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.